So we'll start off with where. Where is a fantastic thing in Scripture? Where is a fantastic thing? Where did it happen? Because the where sometimes shows you how the writer has decided to, if I go back to Marty's windows, where the writer has decided to put the screws into the holding beams. That's what the wheres are sometimes in Scripture. So it's sort of the thing that holds the text together, and you could see things that are happening between the wheres, but the where is where the writer is saying, boom, here, this is something to hold the text. Boom, here's something else to hold the text and to carry the story. But, I mean, that's details for another day, but right now we'll look at where. So let's look at John chapter 2, and let's put that information down. So John chapter 2, we're not getting to when yet, all right? It says, on the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee. So where is this? Cana of Galilee. Cana of Galilee. What's the other where in here? I likely misspelled that. No, I got it right. It's at a wedding, right? So it's a wedding that's occurring there. So right now we have a where. It's at the Cana of Galilee at a wedding. Okay? So, I mean, if we're squeezing our fruit here, when the writer tells us Cana of Galilee, what might that be telling us? Why would the writer tell us Cana of Galilee? Why is this an important bit of detail? Well, because maybe, huh?
There's other Canas.
There's other Canas. So this is the way of the writer to tell you, this is Cana in Galilee. It's not the other Cana. So the writer apparently thinks this is important. So we're seeing here in John that John thinks it's more important to tell you that it's not just a wedding at Cana. He wants you to know that it's Cana of Galilee. Now, of course, remember, your why questions are still in your head from before last week. John, why are you putting that there? Why did you ask? Why did you tell us that it's in Cana of Galilee? Well, we're not answering that yet, right? But that's something that you look for eventually. So it's where? It's at the a wedding at Cana of Galilee. All right. So then we go to the next section. When is this? When is this? It says here, on the third day. Look at verse 1. It says, on the third day, there was a wedding in Galilee. Now, what we don't want to assume is say, this is where we start interpreting this. We go, ah, that means that this was on Wednesday, right? But does it say that? Does it say that this was on Wednesday? Oh, you know what? The Jewish week is different. This means that it was on, and we say a different day. Is that right? No. On the third day. Why is it say on the third day? Why did John decide to include that detail? Now, the thing is, this is a bit of a cheat because I'm starting in chapter 2. We should have started in chapter 1. So let's just hop back for a second in chapter 1. Look at it, John chapter 1, verse 19. Do you see this is the testimony of John? When the Jews sent to him priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, who are you? And then John confesses, and he does not deny, but he confesses, I am not the Christ. Do you see that section there? Look at verse 35 now. It says, again the next day, John was standing with two of his disciples and looked. And as Jesus walked, he said, behold, the Lamb of God. So you see now, here, there's John, and here's these disciples that show up. And John, this happens on the next day. And now look at verse 43. The next day, he purposed to go into Galilee. So here's Jesus with the disciples on the next day after the baptism saying, here, let's go into Galilee. And then it says in the next text, John chapter 2, verse 1, on the third day. Maybe it's the third day from then. Or maybe it's the third day after he decided to go to travel. So we have a day that he says, I'm going to go to Galilee, and then it takes him 3 days. Maybe. But what it is it tells us that this is part of a connected text. This is almost like a therefore, because this is still connected the story to chapter 1. So when we see on third day, we don't automatically say, ah, Wednesday. It means this might be part of something else. It might be part of a sequence. Anyway, so that's just a lot of detail from just the words on the third day. All right, so that's two things we have so far. We have the where, Cana of Galilee at a wedding. We have the when on the third day. Now, let's have the who.
Not the band.
All right, this is the people involved. So what it says there, let's say, it says, on the third day there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, still in verse 1, and the mother of Jesus was there. The mother of Jesus. Mother of Jesus. What doesn't it say?
Father of Jesus.
It doesn't say Father of Jesus. Very good.
It doesn't say Mary.
It doesn't say Mary. Isn't that interesting? Mm. Why would John not use Mary? Why would he use Mother of Jesus instead of Mary? That's a head-scratcher. We don't answer the question, though. It's just a question we ask, and we leave it there. I mean, this is one of those questions that I might put on in my notes there, and I might have a little thing that says, why not Mary? Why not? I don't know the answer to it yet, but at least the question is there. So I'm asking that question, but I'm still looking at the text, right? We're not stopping the process of looking at the text because it's real easy when you're doing the Bible studies to start jumping around. So you do who, it says mother of Jesus, and it's real easy at this point to start doing a full-on character study on who the mother of Jesus is and where she came from, what's her name, and all that stuff. And that's valid. That's okay to do that, to do a character study, if that's why you went into the text. If you went into the text to say, I'm going to study the mother of Jesus, now I'm going to study her, then that's fine. You follow every trail about Mary. But if you went into the text to study John chapter 2, it's time to look at John chapter 2. Don't run off to the bunny trails. Focus on your chart. Like I said, this is how Ray does it. So this is a tool. You might adapt this to whatever way you want. But it's just a helpful tool. So here we are, the mother of Jesus. All right? So look, let's keep going there. And it says in verse 2, and both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding. So Jesus is there, right? And his disciples. That tells us that in this point in time, Jesus already has disciples, right? Well, we see that in the previous chapter anyway. But that means it's part of a connected text. So here we have that Jesus is there and his disciples. Now, how do we get the rest of the details of the who? We'll have to read through the whole text, right? We can't just jump ahead. We can if you know the text. But we're reading through the text. We're seeing what it's there. So we're seeing, so I'll leave this who column there because we don't know what else is coming, right? And we'll see the incident of what's the problem. So what's the issue? So this is a modification of, like, this is a little change on the what, because the what, like I said before, there's so much what that can be happening in this text. So you want to see what's the problem. So for example, when you see the miracle of the woman who has the flow for all that for so many years, and she touches the hem of Jesus's robe. You put down the what is the problem is that she has a flow and there's a crowd of people around and they're touching Jesus. And she touches Jesus. And that's when the miracle happens. So what's the issue? The issue, let's see what it says there. When the wine ran out, the mother of Jesus said to him, they have no wine. So what happened?
The wine ran out.
That's not the only issue, because that would be no problem. That's just, there's no wine. But now the mother of Jesus asks Jesus, and she says, well, it doesn't even say a question, right? What does the text show? It says, they have no wine. She just makes a statement. Jesus, BTW, for your information, they have no wine.
Yeah, she tells Jesus.
All right. And that's not the only thing. Here's this other issue. Look at what it says there. Jesus says to her, "Woman, what does that have to do with us? My hour has not yet come." So here we see two more issues. One
tells Jesus.
One, he says, "What does this have to do with us?
Have to do with us."
And then he says, two, "My hour has not yet come." All right, so right now, this is here's where my mind automatically starts doing. It starts going, ah, his hour. That means his his going to the cross. Well, what does it have to do with wine? What does it have to do with a wedding? Maybe it doesn't have to do with the cross. But I don't know. But that's trying to get into interpretation. We're trying to see what it says. So right now, what I do is say, what's the issue? He says, what does this have to do with us? And then he says, my hour has not yet come. For some reason, that has something to do with his response to her about the question of, they have no wine. I don't know what that is, but I put it down in the chart. So this way, I know that this are the issues. So what winds up happening? So this is where I put down the miracle. Well, I'll put the means, rather. That's how it's done, instead of just a miracle, because this is all part of the miracle. So let's look at what it's happening here. The means, how it happens. So then his mother says to the servants, whatever he says to you, do it. So she tells the servants, whatever he says to you, do it. So that actually answers another question. Who is the people here at this place?
Servants.
So this menu has expanded. There's servants there. All right. So you see how we're jumping around in the chart a little bit? And that's okay, because now what we're doing is we're taking our stuff and putting it in buckets. How many of you have taken apart like parts of a car, like your brakes or anything like that, or parts of an engine block, stuff like that, or a computer, or anything that has a lot of parts? So here's the thing. What my father would do, like, I would help him do stuff, and I'm awful with this stuff, so don't think I know anything. I don't know anything. My father knew how to take apart a diesel engine and put it back together again. So I remember him taking apart parts of our old Mercedes-Benz engine, right? He had gotten this thing years ago, and he was always tweaking it so that it could keep running. So he takes apart all this stuff, and it's like brakes and this and putting it together. And you know what he always had? Extra parts. And then I'm like, well, what's all this? And he's like, they make them with extra parts. And I'm like, that doesn't sound right. But the thing is, he was like, you know what? When I was in school, I would do it the right way. I would have, I would lay out a map of where the things went. So when I take apart my iPod, I have to take off these screws and I put them in like a little square box, this is the first
step
thing.
One.
Then step two was these two screws. Step three was these three screws. Step four was this metal thing. And I put it all in sections. My father did that years ago with the diesel engine. But then when he fixed his brakes, he's like, a brake's a brake. It needs to clamp. That's it. Those are the things, are extra parts. But I think it's he got other parts
right.
From the mechanic. Yeah.
It's like putting something together without reading the directions.
Yeah. You read it at the end. Yeah. And then you're like, they ship these things with these extra parts. But so you put these things into the bucket so that way you easily know how to put it back together again. That's how you, and then you wind up assembling it and deassembling it quicker. So what we're doing here, we're putting these things into buckets. We're seeing it easily where the things are and what's going on, but we're not knowing why yet. All right, so let's go back to the means. It says, whatever he says to you, do it. And then it says, now there were 6 stone water pots set there for the Jewish custom of purification, containing 20 or 30 gallons each. Now, right there, we have a bunch of information. These big jugs of water. for use for the custom of washing something. We don't know what that is, the Jewish custom of purification. It just says this is what they used it for, custom of purification. And that's 20 or 30 gallons each. It doesn't tell us anything yet at that verse about what is happening with them. Jesus says to them, who's he saying this to?
Servants.
The servants. Fill the water pots with water. Oh, so we're getting a means here. We see that Jesus takes the purification jars. He tells the servants, fill them with water. So we're putting that down. That sounds like it's important because now Jesus is doing something here. Mary told the mother of Jesus, told the servants, whatever he says, do it. And now he's telling the servants things to do. So this seems to be important. And then Jesus says to them, fill the water pots with water. So they fill them up to the brim. So they fill them with water to the brim. Why would John tell us that they filled it to the brim? Oh, it's because it means that they were overflowing with joy. No. No interpretation. That's trying to tell us what it means. What does it say? Why did John tell us that their jar is filled with water for purification? Oh, it's because it means that the cleansing of the spiritual. No. What does it say? So we're looking at what it says. So all right, so we keep going there. So he says to them now, draw some out now and take it to the head waiter. I don't know what it says in your Bible. I think it's the master of the feast. All right, so it says draw some out. So draw some out. So this to take some of the water and take it to the whatever, the master of the feast or the head waiter.
Master of the banquet.
Yep. So there he is, there to draw out some, right? Now, it doesn't say anything yet. It doesn't say the miracle is done. It doesn't say the miracle happened, right? We don't see, and the water became wine. Or does it say it in any of your versions up to this point? It doesn't say that, right? It's just Jesus telling them what to do. Now, look what it says. So they took it to him. When the head waiter tasted the water, which had become wine, and did not know where it came from. Stop. This is telling us now the miracle has happened. So we have here two more rows. The miracle is, but actually let's use John's words. I'm going to write the word the sign. The water to wine. Right? So that's the sign, but what we're seeing here is the result of the sign. That means what winds up happening. So what we're seeing is that John, so far, is spending very little time on the actual miracle. What he tells you is what happens to build up to the miracle, and then we see here in the text it says that the head waiter tasted the water, which had become wine. He didn't know where it came from, but the servants who had drawn the water knew. Stop there. What should this now be making us do? We stop at the text and we go, wait a second. We have somebody else in the text, don't we? We have the master of the banquet, or the head waiter. I'll use my term because that's what I've been using anyway. So we have the head waiter. He's tasted the water, right? And it says that it's not water anymore. It's water that's become wine. Now we might start automatically adding details. Ah, it became, those jugs were full with wine. Does the text say that? Ah, it became wine as he drank it. Does it say that? No. John doesn't give us any of those details. He just says the water had become wine. And that's where we should stay. The water's become wine. He tasted. And then it says there that he didn't know where it came from. But the servants who had drawn the water knew. And the head waiter, now this is important there. Does the servants who had drawn the what knew? Did they draw the wine?
Water.
They drew the water. That's weird, right? Now, what is it talking about? Is it saying that they drew the water to fill up the jars? Or is it saying that they drew the water out of the cup, out of the jars, to bring it to the head waiter? It doesn't say. It just says that the servants who had drawn the water knew. All right. And then the head waiter called the bridegroom. So here we have the bridegroom as another person in the story. And he called the bridegroom and said to him, "Every man serves the good wine first, and when the people have drunk freely, then he serves the poorer wine. But you have kept the good wine until now." So we see the result here is, he calls the bridegroom, the head waiter, calls the bridegroom. I'm running out of paper. Bridegroom. And if I had room, I would put the thing about, he says that you have saved the best wine for last. He even gives some details on the way people would have weddings, that they would have, he says, every man. He says, so this is, now mind you, this is the head waiter talking. So he's the one saying the words. And he says that everybody saves the good wine to the beginning and then serves the poor wine at the end. After, it says, after, so when the people have drunk freely. So they're drinking freely and then he serves the poor wine. So it's not, so obviously that tells us something about the wine back there. Could you drink it all day long with no effect? No. It did affect you. Apparently it had some alcohol in it. Not saying anything about how much alcohol, but it was enough for you to affect the taste, your taste palate, and to distinguish between stinky wine and good wine. So, there they go. They serve the poor wine afterwards, but you've kept the good wine until now. What does that tell you about the head waiter? Was he one of the people drinking? No. Oh, he was able to distinguish the taste, right? But we don't see anything about the bridegroom. It's him talking to the bridegroom, him saying it. This isn't over yet, though. This is just the result that the head waiter is saying this. But then it says, verse 11, "This beginning of his signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory." So here we have the result is manifested his glory. Manifested glory. And then what I like to do, I like to add a column that, I mean, if I had space, I would do this. I like to add a row that says faith or belief or something like that. That's what I like to do because look what it says there. It says, "And his disciples believed in him." So I like to do that. I like to add the result as a separate column. The disciples believed in him. This makes me ask a question, though. Is it, like, just looking at the text, John, I asked the text, "John, is it possible to have a disciple that doesn't believe? What do you mean that the disciples believe in him?" So that's a question that I put down, like, just like as I asked, why not Mary, I might put another question, how is this possible? I might do that. I might even ask, what does that even mean? That the disciples believed in him. So I might do that. And then these questions that are coming up here, they might be questions that come out later as I'm reading the book of John. So when you get to John chapter 6, and you see a group of people that are disciples, and they're following Jesus, and he says, "You don't follow me because of the sign, but you follow me because you ate some food." And then he says, "If you want real food, you need to eat my flesh and drink my blood." And then it says, "And many of those disciples didn't believe in him, and they left him." And then you go, wait a second. It's possible to be a disciple who doesn't believe? That's weird. But we're going to get to that some other day. But the point here is that these things come up later. So you write down those questions because they'll come up. So here we have a chart. All right. Now the chart gives us a lot of information. Where is this thing? Wedding of Galilee. A wedding in Galilee, in Cana of Galilee. When? It happens on the third day. Who is involved? The mother of Jesus. Jesus, his disciples, the servants, the head waiter, the bridegroom. This is stuff that you can have in your pocket just by looking at a chart. What's the issue? They run out of wine at the wedding. They need wine, and the mother of Jesus comes up to Jesus and says they have no wine. And then Jesus starts saying, well, you know what? Here's the issue. What does that have to do with me? What do you have to do with me? And it's not yet my hour. And the means is that then he starts gathering the servants and tells them to fill the pots with water and to then take the water to the head waiter. And what happens? The water has turned to wine. Why? What's the result of this? The head waiter confesses that you've saved the best for last. And then you see that the disciples believed in him. Why would John include this story? Why would he do that? And he makes sure to tell us, he says outright, verse 11, this beginning of his signs. This is the first of his signs. Why would he do that? Why would he include that this was his first of his signs? How many of the other writers included this sign? Did Matthew include it?
No.
Mark?
No.
Luke didn't. Why would John include this? What is it teaching? And then we have to read the rest of the text. So as we read verse 12, after this he went to Capernaum. Oh, well, he went to another area. He, his mother, his brothers, and his disciples, and they stayed there a few days. What does this have to do with anything? Is this a transition verse? Is this part of the same story? So I read another verse, verse 13. The Passover of the Jews was near, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Oh, I must be in a new section, and I stop. You see how the verses don't seem to be connected here? Is this underscoring about the wine? Do I keep going? I don't know. I need to keep reading. So I'll stop there now on this charting here, because we're going to look at if you guys did any of your homework, or I can even assign some homework too. But
don't get smart.
But. What we're looking at here, though, is we're stopping there for this stuff here, charting and reading smartly, reading with asking these questions and organizing all the information so that we know what's there and what to look at. Yeah.
A couple of things.